Listeners, the philosopher Robert Nozick has a famous thought experiment called the experience machine. The experience machine is capable of generating a perfectly realistic virtual world and acting on your brain such that whilst you are inside, you believe that it is real. You can stay in for as long as you like, even permanently, and the experience machine has been programmed to give you a perfect life where you get everything that you ever want. There's maybe just enough adversity to give context, but a life inside the experience machine represents the happiest life that you could ever live. And the question is, knowing that it's fake, would you choose to deceive yourself and plug in? Do you care about happiness, or do you care about other things like duty and truth? You don't have to wonder what life inside the experience machine is like, though, because we on the Kill James Bond podcast are taking off our virtual reality headsets. We are scooping the goo off our bodies as we get out of our pods. We have just spent 2 hours inside the experience machine in the world of Mamma Mia 2. Here we go again.
Why does the experience machine have so much ABBA in it?
There's a lot more Swedish pop inside the virtual world than I thought, but...
They ran out of time programming the experience machine and only had enough time to put one song artist in.
Yeah, I was looking alphabetically and I just grabbed the first one.
They couldn't get the rights to any others. They couldn't license any music inside the experience machine except ABBA. Let's fucking go.
Be still my beating vagina.
Hello, welcome to another bonus episode of Kill James Bond. I am Alice Caldwell-Kelly. Joining me, Abigail Thorne and Devon.
So Alice, I'm just going to ask you some questions here
The reason why I'm not helping the turtle is because it looks like a piece of shit. I don't care about that fucking turtle.
We all know what the facts of this are, but I'm asking you them on the record now to sort of establish.
Okay. You're deposing
what
me.
What is the theme of this podcast? Kill James Bond.
The theme of this podcast.
Suffering.
It is. We are doing a feminist socialist interrogation of the character James Bond through his 25 movies and trying to discern what, if anything, James Bond can tell us about, in particular, masculinity. Why?
That's right. Okay. You've also said beforehand that we'd use bonus episodes to discuss deuterocanonical works of fiction regarding James Bond. So
that's
just quickly,
correct.
What movie have we watched for this episode
well,
of the podcast?
We have watched, as Abigail so kindly told us, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, the musical sequel to Mamma Mia.
And why?
That's a good question.
Because I thought it would be funny to do that. Now,
right.
Yes.
Very well. Carry on.
Thank you. So, having thus deflated me here.
Because Pierce Brosnan is in it.
Final question.
Pierce Brosnan.
This a tax-deductible purchase?
Yes, you can get the $3.49 you spent renting this movie deducted from your taxes of business.
I did not pay to watch this film.
Yeah, you watched it in a
right
strictly
now.
illegal manner, yes. So I choose to believe that this is deuterocanonical Bond because it's a hallucination that Pierce Brosnan Bond is having in the North Korean Pussy Mind Palace from Die Another Day.
That would make sense.
That's possible.
That would make sense.
Yeah, he is in the experience machine while he's being like stung with scorpions on his dick and balls and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so the experience machine places us in Greece, a Greek island.
On the island of green screen.
Yeah. Yes. And let me tell you, I got a drop here that's going to be useful for so many things in the future.
Jesus Christ, what kind of island is this?
Me arriving on Little St. James.
Jesus.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So we're on Greek Little St. James.
Mm-hmm. Has anyone here seen Mamma Mia?
No.
Because that would be a betrayal of our code. Oh, okay.
I saw it on a ferry when I was a child going to France, actually. Which moment, I don't remember anything about it. I do seem to remember that Pierce Brosnan was in it and sang a lot more than he did in this one.
Yes. They've worked out he's bad at singing, so he just doesn't.
Yeah. It's based on a very, very famous stage jukebox musical, which I think is one of the most successful musicals of all time. And I haven't seen it, but from what I can gather, it's about a woman who, like, there are potentially three men who might be her father: Colin Firth, Pierce Brosnan, and Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah, she was a hoe in the 70s, and now she runs this hotel on this Greek island, and she has to find out which one is her baby daddy.
She went through an exactly 3-day long hoe phase.
Yeah, and the thing is that this hoe is now grown, was played by Meryl Streep, and the first thing this movie tells you is Meryl Streep is fucking dead. She will not be appearing in this movie, movie tells you. There is a big framed portrait of her that essentially just says dead now.
Mm-hmm. Which I was like, okay, that's a really, really bold move for like a musical. It's like, okay, it's going to be about like grief and loss.
Yeah,
and like,
absolutely.
I was like, okay, cool. I'm interested to see. I'm on board. That's a cool premise. Absolutely.
And so we see her daughter, Amanda Seyfried, Sophie, who is operating this hotel that her mum had like built up and is about to like relaunch it. And we see that she is assisted by Señor Cienfuegos, Andy Garcia, who is her sort of like general manager and handyman, and her boyfriend, Sky, Dominic Cooper, looking weird as hell. Is away in New York learning the hotel business.
There's a lot of scenes that are just sort of like business scenes out of nowhere, but they don't really serve a purpose.
Yeah.
All the scenes are out of nowhere and serve no purpose.
That's actually true. You're right.
He's learning how to do hotel business in New York, which is going to really apply to like a small Greek island.
Mm-hmm. But she's inviting people to the grand reopening, and we see that she chooses not to invite her grandmother, Ruby. She tears up that invitation. It's like, she never turns up anyway.
Yes. So she does this. And we see her like renovating the hotel, and then we are yanked back in time to 1979, New College, Oxford, where a young Meryl Streep, her mum, Donna, is about to graduate with her two friends, Rosie and Tanya. And I fucking love Rosie and Tanya so much.
Young Donna, played by Lily James, who is an actor that I do really like.
I really like Lily James in this, not least because she reminded me of someone that I like a lot. Absolutely.
That's kind of you to compare her to me. That's really kind of I really like her.
She reminds me of two people that I like a lot.
I cocked her instantly and was like, oh.
It's like, it's nice that there's a transgender woman. No,
this is a very, very hard role, the role of young Donna, and like I think this actress does really well.
Yeah, you have to be a younger, more vivacious Meryl Streep.
And it's so, like manic pixie dream
how
girl
do you do
shit.
That?
Yeah, exactly. So she is graduating, and she gives this like valedictorian speech, which immediately segues into an ABBA song, "When I Kissed the Teacher."
Mm-hmm.
Do not do
my,
this.
My first note was just, they're running very low on ABBA songs by the second movie.
I think there's like two or three actual ABBA songs in there, and the rest they've just like cobbled together. But yeah, this turns into this sort of like all singing, all dancing thing with Donna and her two roommates, Tanya and Rosie, who are, I guess, in a band.
ABBA cover band. Is it just a band in the world of the Experience Machine?
It's just a band, I believe. Now this
scene is very important, listeners, because this is the first musical number, and it has to establish the rules. Like whether or not the music is diegetic, which is to say, can the characters hear this, or is this like happening in their imagination? And what this scene tells us is that Donna is really singing. Her classmates are really on stage singing with her. And this is like really happening. When characters sing, they are really truly singing.
Yes.
This is established because she starts a fucking tape player. This is the only time throughout this entire fucking movie that we are shown the music creating device.
Yeah.
And the rules fall apart before the end of the musical number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing is, knowing what diegesis is and when to use it is for cowards and morons and fools. Yes. So this movie will be violating all of these rules over the next 2 hours.
The next 2 minutes.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Because they immediately leave the fucking hall and the music continues. Mm. And none of them have the tape player.
It just keeps going.
Cycle to a houseboat.
Donna does manage to kiss her professor, Celia Imrie, on the lips. This is the gayest thing that happens in the whole movie.
Tragically. Which is fucked up.
I know, because the thing is, right, you know what's heterosexual as shit? A musical theater and the songs of ABBA.
Mm-hmm. Performed by three young women who all live together,
who all
travel together.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, listeners, for those of you who are too young to know, which I imagine would be like most of you, ABBA are a band from the 70s. Oh, this music is like 50 years old, like well before any of our time. I mean, we are being trans several hundred years old and have plagued Europe for that long. So yes, we were around to see ABBA in the first instance. But yeah, ABBA are a band from the 70s who, as I understand it, were quite big for reasons that this film doesn't really show.
Yes, but within the universe of this movie, ABBA does not exist.
These songs are entirely like...
original?
Original autochthonous. They arise from situations that are in these people's lives. Donna is writing ABBA songs as she's singing them.
Mm-hmm. I choose to believe this because it makes something very funny at the end of this movie.
It makes several things funny, but yeah. So she sings this song about being hot for teacher, and then they all jump into the river, and we're yanked back again into the future. And at this point, we're 10 minutes into the movie. I feel like fucking Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, 10 minutes into the movie, there have been two songs. Lily sang one earlier.
Amanda Seyfried.
Sophie.
So also, immediately, first 2 minutes, we set up a theme. Meryl Streep is dead. Grief. How do we move on? Okay, cool. Great, I'm on board. But then we flash back to 1979, and we see Donna alive and like happy and doing great. So from the audience's point of view, the theme of grief and loss is immediately undercut by the fact that like all these characters keep going, oh, it's so hard to move on without her, and we the audience are like, I just saw her, she's fine.
Yeah, I'm so sick of superhero origin stories. You really don't need to tell me how Donna Sheridan became a giant hoe. And
Meryl Streep
superhero
origins.
Movie where the superhero's power is to create musical numbers would be amazing.
That's a very dangerous idea. Patent pending.
You can't write that.
Yeah, no, you can't. So we're yanked back into the present where Sophie calls fuckboy Dominic Cooper, her boyfriend, and he's like, well, I'm working in New York, but they've offered me the job full time, and I think I want to take it because it's everything I've ever wanted in life. Thus introducing some conflict, which is a fantastic thing in fiction. It's something that you want.
Yes.
A little bit of conflict. And so they have a fight. He hangs up on her and like won't call her back. And they both sing.
They have a fight where they just keep yelling exposition at each other, which is very funny.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's like, I know that this is everything you've ever wanted and that we've established this. And it's like, but yeah, I know that also your mom left you this hotel and you've got... And it's like, okay. Yeah. You didn't need to look into the camera and read the Wikipedia entry for Mamma Mia 1.
Also, I can't stress enough that your mum, Meryl Streep, is dead. I'm sorry that this happened and that you're very upset by it, but she is not alive anymore and will not be appearing in
enlivened.
This movie. Yeah, she enlivened and she in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So in any case, Sophie, now sort of like grieving the loss of her mum and the loss of her boyfriend, goes down to the docks to pick up her mum's old hoe roommates.
First, she sings a song.
Oh,
she does sing a song. Not very well, which worried me.
No, it's a bit pitchy.
She and Dominic Cooper sing a song together. So I'm like, this isn't diegetic because presumably they're not both in New York and the Island of Green Screen singing at the same time. This sequence is the best bit of the film for me. It's like quite interestingly shot. The way the set moves in and out as if they are on a stage musical. I think it's quite cool. It's something they do also in the Anna Karenina film, is they film it to look like a play, and I found it quite visually interesting. That kind of drops off as the film goes on, sadly. But yeah, that was my favorite bit.
So they sing. Oh,
we're not far in.
No,
we're 10 minutes in. So they sing. She's heartbroken. And then she goes to pick up her mum's roommates.
Yes.
From the docks. And let me tell you, these roommates, Tanya and Rosie, make the movie for me, carry it single handedly.
They are so good.
Tragically, they are straight.
Yeah, this
Which
is
no, bullshit.
These two women who like travel together and wear lots of chiffon and big hats and sunglasses and are
finish
like
each other's sentences
catastrophically horny for everything that comes near them.
Like fucking 3.5 Röntgen of just like pure horny energy. Like radiating off these women at all times.
For fuck's sake, we're talking about Christine Baranski. And Julie Walters.
Anyway, to be fair, I will say very, very good casting to get two women as ambiently, powerfully horny as Meryl Streep.
Absolutely.
Really
absolutely.
They have to be horny for Andy Garcia so that we can establish that they aren't gay.
Yes.
So she's driving them up to the house. They meet Andy Garcia, and that's where you get the.
He's still my beating vagina.
She's like this about every man she meets. It fucking rules. One of the things that I like about this movie is this is the fun aunt of movies.
We also get Amanda Seyfried turning almost directly to camera and saying, Colin Firth and Stellan Skarsgård will not be appearing in this film. which is very funny. Like, we get lines where we're like, oh yeah, like they can't come to the grand reopening because like he's doing a business thing and like, you know, Stellan Skarsgård's winning an award. And like, I was like, okay, cool. So we're setting up that like Pierce Brosnan's the only guy
These guys aren't appearing in the movie. Meryl Streep isn't appearing in the movie because she's dead. Fine. Mm-hmm. Expectations absolutely tempered. It's a sequel. Fine. Perfect. Also, she talks about her grandma again, and she says...
She hasn't been seen outside of Las Vegas for decades.
Yeah, my grandma, Howard Hughes...
Notice that gentle background music of Does Your Mama Know?
Yeah.
Baja.
Yeah.
I haven't got a thing at Baja.
My grandmother, the guy from Diamonds Are Forever.
Who is constantly shitting, yeah.
Yeah, refuses to leave his casino where he's being impersonated by Trans Blofeld. So it's just, it's you two.
I am Trans Blofeld.
That's right. It's you, it's Pierce Brosnan, who we haven't seen yet.
I want the procedure done tonight.
And we're going to do the grand opening of this hotel, right?
Yeah, with the theme of grief.
Yes, with a theme of grief and also catastrophically horny older women.
Yeah, because Julie Walters is just sort of like slowly breaking down into tears every time Donna's mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Once again, there's a theme of grief.
but then there's not, because we're back to 1979 and Donna is like alive and happy.
Yes, she's in Paris and she meets a sort of like charmingly befuddled Englishman. In sort of the Hugh Grant thing, and then he hates this man. Yeah, he tries to ask her for like help because he thinks she's working in the hotel. She says she's not, and then he delivers another line that's very useful for drops.
I should call the police.
I like this guy. He's cute. He's meant to be young Colin Firth.
Yeah, this
is
Harry.
I like seeing actors do impressions of older actors. I think it's quite funny. I like to imagine that Colin Firth is like secretly very wounded by this quite cutting impersonation of him.
It's generally very funny.
Yeah, he's cute.
So yeah, he's charmingly befuddled. He tries to like hit on her in a charmingly befuddled, sort of like Hugh Grant, Colin Firth way. Mm-hmm. Like asking to hold her hand, things of this nature. And then he takes her to a restaurant that I would take a woman to.
The scene where they're walking is very funny because his only utility... She's just delivering exposition again about what her plans are, and his only utility is to repeat the last word she uses in a sentence. Mm-hmm. So she just goes like, I'm going to Greece, and he goes, Greece. She's like, yeah, I'm leaving tomorrow, and he goes, tomorrow? I'm like, oh, you fucking Echo? Shut up, Jesus.
Yeah, because her deal is now that she's graduated, she wants to go out and do some ho shit in the world, which is admirable. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yeah,
and
she's
decided
for
no fucking reason that the ho shit is to be found in Greece. And so she's going there, but she's in Paris on the way. And he's going to grow up and become like a rich banker. But before that, he's like grown his hair out. Anyway, he takes her to the restaurant that I would take a girl to. a restaurant which appears to be like sort of how do you say, like early 19th century militarily themed.
Like Napoleon themed.
Yeah, everyone's wearing Napoleon. The waiters are dressed as Napoleon. The maitre d' is dressed as Napoleon. And at this point, yeah, I simply wrote down, I see what's about to happen.
Familiar with the works of ABBA?
Yeah, I can see the tree coming towards me through the windscreen. And
like the girl in Hereditary. He's a virgin, okay. And he's like,
yes, yeah. He says, can you take my virginity? Can you like peg me to within an inch of my life?
Which, to be fair, upon meeting Lily James, reasonable.
And she laughs at him. And
absolutely not.
Absolutely like, oh, not. Well this is the time for a big song and dance number, which again is entirely diegetic and also non-diegetic, because he, in a sort of display of passion, does the ABBA song Waterloo with a song and dance number with the waiters.
He has a sword fight with waiters using baguettes.
Yes, he
absolutely
does.
Absolutely insane enunciation of Napoleon during this song. Mm-hmm. His first line he sings is so, because it's like, just Napoleon is like,
Napoleon.
If you listen
yes.
to the ABBA song, they do sort of say Napoleon very fast to get it through the theme. But
he lengthens
the word Napoleon.
This is when a terrible thing happened to me. I started smiling. And the thing about that is I didn't stop doing that for the remainder of this movie. This is the horrible thing, right? The secret that when it gets out will be the death of you is that I enjoyed this movie quite a lot.
Alice is like putting the VR helmet back on. She's trying to scoop the goo back into the pod. Let me get back in the
ABBA machine. Let me get back in.
And they're like, Alice, the steak isn't real.
I don't care. Have you seen the real
world?
Right
in that fucking movie.
Yes, it's fucking I don't want to remember any of this shit. I don't want to know who Amy Therese is. I want to be someone cool. I want to listen to a lot of ABBA. And I want to eat a delicious steak.
I don't
want to
know what ABBA is. I want to personally
no, I
come up
invent
with the songs,
the songs of ABBA. Yes.
Because I'm put in a situation that is very strangely specific.
So he like invents the song Waterloo to convince her to fuck him, which
does work.
She's like, yeah, all right. And then they sit back down at the table and everyone else is normal, which means it's not diegetic. And he's just like, this is meant to convey that he has like showed her his passion in some form of words rather than actually doing the baguette sword fight.
What?
Is the music real? Is it not? Does ABBA exist?
It doesn't matter. So yeah, she fucks him, and he's like quite English about the whole thing. He's like, yeah, but was it good though? Fine, whatever.
Yeah, he's just like,
but then
thank
guess
you.
What?
Thanks so
she's
much.
She's dead.
She's fucking dead.
Remember,
oh,
she's
you were getting attached to this character. Well, she's fucking dead.
Here's an old man crying about it.
Yes, because at this point I wrote down, there he is.
Yeah, I also wrote that down.
Sophie goes to a little shack on the island where Pierce Brosnan, Sam, one of her three potential dads, looking old as shit.
My man looks like testicles left out in the sun.
looking real old.
Gotta get some estrogen, man.
is working. He misses dead Meryl Streep, but he like reassures Sophie that like she's not letting her down and that she would have been proud of her. And at this point we get a line that is gonna be, you know, apt for the rest of the movie for you, Abby.
It will get better.
Yeah. Just not quite yet.
Yeah.
I do like this sort of grim line we'd have. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my notes say, is he talking about the film?
Yeah.
Yep. He sings about Donna. I think he sings.
Well, he doesn't really sing, because like in the first movie, Pierce Brosnan's singing was compared to like various dying animals. And what they learned about
this
was
rude.
don't give him any songs, and when you do give him a song, just have him like fucking Lou Reed that shit. Just talk the lyrics. And yeah, that's kind like of
very
what he does.
Sadly and slowly talk the lyrics, which is works for the scene.
I think he does a fine job. Yeah,
absolutely.
He does fine. And like, this is the thing. He's Pierce Brosnan is not a bad actor, and he does grief quite well. And that's it is. At this point, the movie is like using the big baby's first themes playset, and it's hitting you with one of the themes of this movie is grief and grieving for someone who is dead and not appearing in this movie anymore.
But don't feel too bad because she's alive again in 1979.
Welcome back to 1979, where she's found another guy.
Yes,
and that guy is Omid Djalili for some reason.
Omid is playing a Greek border guard that everyone is just sort of baring their hearts to for no real reason.
Omid Djalili is an Iranian British man. He is not Greek. Why is he in this film?
He has a nice time judging everyone's appearance based on their passport photos.
Yeah, that is
so. Like, that's the recurring bit is he looks at their photo, looks at them, and he's like, "Oh, you grew your hair. It looks better short." Which is fine. It's fun. Anyway, so she misses the ferry because of Omid Djalili. And so she's looking around for a way to get to this fucking island that she's obsessed with for no reason. And her eyes light upon a Scandinavian twink who owns a boat.
He's quite attractive.
He is.
Yes, quite Bill, attractive.
Yes. And
he was my favorite of the three guys.
Of the three, definitely. He seems the most...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Best acted of the three.
Certainly.
This film is such a, like, a harem anime in that you have to choose your favorite boyfriend. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's got all three
of them. I understand the appeal,
this,
I think.
This is an otome, nice. Yes. So, he gets her on the boat, right, and to take her across to the island. And he tries to like seduce her. And
yeah,
then
he tries it on and it's not working. So I wrote, there's only one way to fix this one, bud.
Yeah, it's quite fun that he's actually like actively trying to get her into bed. Like, he's the only one who I think behaves realistically like a young man with ulterior motives. Like, it's quite fun.
That's quite an astute line out of Donna here, where she says, "Oh, there's two kinds of seducers: the kind who don't like women and just want to assert power over them, James Bond, and then there's the kind who actually do and who are way more dangerous because they fall in love with you and then they fall out of love with you again the next night."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my note here just says she's absolutely reading this guy his ass, so naturally he is going to sing an ABBA song.
Yes, which they do. They sing. What do they fucking sing on
the
boat?
What the fuck do they sing? Hang on.
They're running out of ABBA songs so
why
badly.
Why did it have to be me?
Yes.
Why did it have to be me, that song?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. As they're going to the island, they find there is this stranded fisherman, Alexio, who, like, comically interrupts this guy, this Norwegian guy. His name's Bill. Swedish, whatever. His attempt to, like, seduce Donna. Because his boat is stuck in, like, it's dead in the water, and he has to go and get married to the love of his life, Apollonia, who is, you know, they're like in a sort of Romeo and Juliet thing. They're eloping because their parents don't want them to get married because she's fancy. They take him there. He tries to, like, swim to her as soon as he sees her on the dock and starts, like, half drowning, and she leaps in after him. And at this point, I wrote down, God fucking damn it, I like this movie. I'm having a nice time.
Yeah, this is the half of the movie that I like, is the 1979 ho shit.
Well, my note is that his dive was bitch made, so I hope she marries the other guy. But
he does still very hot with his shirt off, though.
For a point, one of a second, not that guy, I mean the sailor.
Bill,
I forgot the name of.
Yes.
No, the other.
Oh, Alexio.
The fisherman, Alexio, For fucking 0.1 of a second when he's first introduced, because it's quite a wide shot from pretty far away, I thought it was Adrian Brody. And I was like, what the fuck?
He does kind of have Adrian Brody's haircut and face shape and that.
But it zoomed in a little bit more and I was like, okay, right.
It's like, ooh, Jesus. Okay. Yeah, a bit weird there.
And also, there's the British guy's here too.
Yes, he is also like following her to the island because he has fallen in love with her and has
appearing
followed her
for
across
the second
Europe
and final time in this movie.
No, like, I don't even know how he knew where she was going. She didn't tell him about the island. Anyway,
he's trying to explain why he's a star-crossed lover to the Greek border guard.
Yes, yeah, and he's like, "Oh, you cut your hair. Looks better short. It's good. Yeah. So at this point, we are again yanked back forward. Where?
Because she's dead.
Because she's fucking dead. And so
she's dead. Everyone's sad.
Sophie has a little conversation with Señor Cienfuegos, her general manager. And at this point, I wrote down punished Andy Garcia dropped in from a different movie because she's just sort of like walking along. She's talking about heartbreak, but like the same thing with the 70s thing where she's like, men are pigs and seducers. It's like the tone of this movie is such that it doesn't really mean it. There's no malice in it because this movie is the nice machine. It's about having a nice time. And so yes. Like all of this stuff is just there, as Abby said in the opening, for texture, right? And then, so she says all of this to Señor Cienfuegos, and then he hits her with,
"Not for me. She left. Never to return. But don't you worry. I have made my peace with pain.
I have made my peace with pain."
Like, what are you doing in the ABBA musical, man? I don't know.
Sir, what? Did you, like, are you lost? Are you here from a different musical?
He's here from Parade.
Yeah, just doing the whole of, like, empty chairs and empty tables in the middle of this ABBA musical.
Jesus.
But that's it. That's genuinely like the scene guide for this. This scene is called Cienfuegos has given up on happiness.
No!
Cienfuegos! Come
so
on,
have
man.
I, having watched this film. So at this point, we get Sophie wanders around the hotel. At the same time as 1979, Donna wanders around doing manic pixie dream girl shit. Like,
yes.
She's dreaming of like fixing up this dilapidated hotel that she's just found on a hilltop.
Yeah, which is falling apart to her touch. Everything she touches like falls off.
Yeah, but we see how in Monday it's been like fixed up and it's beautiful. And then in 1979, Donna meets a literal dark horse.
Yes, because this isn't enough of a girl movie. Yeah, she meets a dark horse in the, I guess, hotel basement?
Not clear why my horse this basement. Horse is there.
I was just like, who's been taking care of this horse?
I don't know, but like, she like knocks something over and then that frightens the horse and a storm breaks out, which frightens the horse even more.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to look for help. And she finds, in the rain, riding his motorbike, a young Pierce Brosnan from before he was Irish when he was the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because that's the crucial thing about young Pierce Brosnan, is that he does not have the same accent. He just, like, I guess he started doing it as an affectation.
Yeah.
After the course of this movie.
I think this actor does, like, a reasonably good young Brosnan. It's kind of like before he becomes confident, which is quite cute.
It's nice.
He instantly is besotted with her because in this universe, anybody who sees an American blonde woman instantly goes insane, which I approve of. And yeah, I agree with it. That's really, it checks out.
Yes, script consultant Abigail Thorne.
That's right. That's right. So together they calm this horse and take it back to the town on the island.
This is intercut with in the modern time, there's a storm going and it's like fucking up the island.
Yeah, fucks up her perfect opening and now it's not going to happen.
Which is like, what?
It causes
like,
some mild, like a pot blows over. We never really see much of this.
Well, no, it's fun because it's intercut between like young Donna and young Sam, like making their way through the island in the middle of a storm. Intercut with old Sam, Pierce Brosnan, and Donna's daughter, Sophie.
Yeah.
Yes.
The island, which it's fine. It's nice.
They have a little romance. They go to the bar on the island where they have a surprisingly like sort of go-go bordello-ish band, which is run by the owner's son.
The only, I think, genuinely Eastern Greek looking guy in this fucking movie,
mm-hmm,
which is strange for a movie set entirely on an Eastern Greek island, but
yeah,
and a green screen.
She gets a job singing in this bar because they audition her and she's like, oh, just come up with an ABBA song just on the fly.
Yeah, so this once again, this is diegetic because they're like, please sing us a song now. Please actually sing a song now.
Yes.
My notes say, at this point, a car alarm started going off from the street outside my window, which greatly improved the experience of watching this film.
So they have this like whirlwind romance. He's once again, he's in the same position as Harry. He has this life planned out for himself as an architect, but he's like taking time out to find himself.
Mm-hmm.
In order,
she loves him. He's the one that she actually says, like, you know, you should stay with me. I'm going to stay on this island.
Yeah,
you should stay here too and live with me in this abandoned hotel.
Yes, and he sort of agrees.
Yeah, during that speech, she does refer to her pussy as miraculous, which was nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's called being transgender. Anyway, so because you need a little bit of conflict to give you texture here, at this point, she is betrayed by him.
What?
She goes through his stuff and she finds a photo of him with a beautiful woman who is not her.
His fiancée.
Yeah, she extracts from him that he is engaged to be married to her. And she honestly. He did not tell her about his fiance.
Honestly, yeah. Who would meet a beautiful blonde American woman and cheat on their partner with that beautiful blonde American woman? That is a despicable thing to do. It's certainly not something that I would do, and it's certainly not something that I've done twice.
Jesus Christ. My only note here is that this is an entirely reasonable reaction. You don't get to have a sad boy sing song about it.
Because yeah, which he does. Yeah.
He immediately starts like very sadly singing an ABBA song, which I can't remember which one it fucking
was. I mean, I'm sorry, my dude, I do understand, but also you do have to take the consequences of that decision.
I think it's knowing me, knowing you even.
It's
very funny that it's the Alan Partridge theme.
But he just very sadly sings that. And I'm just like, man, this is reasonable. Also, it's been like day three. You're not losing anything here.
Yeah. You still got a fiance. Like, you know, you can just
go to your beautiful fiance if you wanted to, man. I don't know.
Remember how we said in the beginning that you know, Colin Firth, Stellan Skarsgård, they're not going to be in this movie.
Yes, they fucking are.
Incorrect.
Because cut to Japan business
cut to
hours.
Colin Firth.
Step one: you become a ninja. Colin Firth is... the thing is, I hadn't seen the first one. I didn't know anything about the cast. So the charmingly English befuddled guy, at that point, I went, oh, it's Colin Firth. And then immediately after this, they introduced Stellan Skarsgård, and I went, oh, that's Stellan Skarsgård. So, like, for me, this was, like, the single most convenient piece of exposition is just to be like, yeah, this is this guy, bye. But
like,
yeah.
Oh, right. So
Colin Firth is this like high-flying banker.
He's in the business factory doing deals.
He works in the business factory, but the business factory is boring. And so
he's doing a deal, RN, but it's taking too long. And he's just like, you know what? I really like my daughter. Goodbye forever.
Yeah, I'm going to leave, sort it out amongst yourself, because family is all that matters. I am one of three dads to this daughter. And so I'm just going to go to her hotel thing in Greece. Bye.
Yeah. Cut to
Sweden. Sweden.
Cut to Sweden, where Stellan Skarsgård, who I'm genuinely convinced is only accepting roles that let him wear a fat suit these days.
He loves that shit.
Loves that. And you know what? Hell yeah.
People
think Pierce Brosnan is a feeder.
Me.
No, he's so Stellan Skarsgård in a fat suit is playing Stellan Skarsgård's identical twin. Who he has foisted the duty of accepting an award on, so he, the thin identical twin, can go to Greece. Great, fantastic.
Perfect.
No notes. Absolute cinema. Now, at this point, because Donna is heartbroken, her roommates show up to try and like cheer her up, Rosie and Tanya.
It's really funny to me that Tanya has legitimately not changed her hairstyle since the
70s. Yes, I wrote this down. She dresses like a fun 60-year-old in her 20s. It's perfect.
I mean, frankly, all this movie says to me is that women's fashion hit an absolute all-time high in the 70s.
That is true. But also,
just
if you find a style, which in this case is sort of looking like a... you know, a brown hair dye Anna Wintour with big glasses and a big hat, and it works for you, never, ever change. Never experiment. Stick with that look until your dying day, because it will be fire the whole time.
You will not even grow into it. You're into it now, but it will just continue to age like a fucking wine. Like it's
they sing, and once again, it is diegetic. This is really happening. They are singing on a stage.
Yes, because Donna's like, well, I don't want to sing a new ABBA song that I've invented about being happy, because I'm not happy and I'm not in love. And so they go, well, why don't you sing about how you really feel? And so she does. And what she sings is Mamma Mia on stage at the bar. And this is the best song in the whole movie.
Like, it's really good.
It's really good. It's genuinely really good.
Like, Lily James really sells starting off this song sort of like not feeling it and getting really, really into it as she goes along. It's genuinely very fun. I hate that this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is a James Bond podcast.
Dragging you along with it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Take that VR helmet off. But then,
put it back on.
Bill returns and Donna's friends are like, well, I know that you're heartbroken, but what if a hunky Swedish man like nutted inside you on a boat? Would that help you feel better?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
And incidentally, Rosie is like, this fucking Scandinavian needs to like fuck me immediately.
ASAP.
Yeah, ASAP. I need that dick inside me. And so she is heartbroken because it's not fair that Donna gets three hot men. And she doesn't even get one. And at this point, we begin a series of sort of excruciating fat jokes at Christine Waters' expense.
Yeah.
Christine Waters? Julie Waters. Where she's like, oh, I will eat my feelings. You know, I will do this with cake. And I think it's supposed to be relatable, but I don't know. Some of them are a bit crueler than others. Yeah.
In the modern day, we see that she still has a chip on her shoulder about like she never got to be with Bill.
Well, she did. She did, is the thing. She got married and then they divorced because he cheated on her.
Oh. That's
true.
Yeah. So at this point, Donna gets fucked on a yacht. She gets fucked
Donna,
on a...
Donna, how come your mom lets you have three boyfriends?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Thanks. So Bill busts inside there. It's the 70s, so like you could just go like, I don't want to wear condoms because I don't like the way they feel. Actually, my dick's too big. Things of that nature.
Yeah, it's tight. Yeah,
it's gay.
Yeah,
weak
it's
shit.
Gay makes me feel weird. I don't like it. which is why she has this sort of like sort of cum bouillabaisse going on.
That's one of the worst things I think you've ever said in your life.
Yeah, no, that's so much. Really up there.
That's a truly terrible phrase that should not be said in the experience machine world of ABBA. That is
the blended Greek yogurt of cum.
That's your that's going to be your screen name, I'm afraid, Alice, is cum bouillabaisse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cum be boy bouillabaisse. It's a three boy bouillabaisse. So she gets fucked on the yacht and
afterwards she's just like, yeah, this did help, but I do need to get back to the islands. Yeah. And he's just like,
The woman who like owns the bar is like, actually, I own that decrepit old hotel. You can stay there for free if you want, because you rescued my nice horse.
Yeah.
Because you're in the experience machine.
Why not say, does she have the right to immigrate to Greece? Do you need visas in 1979? She can't just fucking live here.
Visas in the 70s were like condoms. You could just decide that you didn't
computers
want to
yet.
Do one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You just roll check. On it. Omid Jaili Lamin. Fuck it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, fair enough.
This is that we don't manage to abolish all borders, but we reform them to the point that all border guards are Omar Jalili in this movie, where he just like gives you a sort of like a weird look and goes, "Ah, your hair was better short," stamps the thing and lets you through.
Yeah, you can get it.
I do have to know. I'd be remiss if I didn't. Bill's shirt in the scene that I do need. I like it a lot.
So, at this point, Donna discovers that she is pregnant because she's been letting a series of men. Bust inside her role.
Is Sophie happens. In the modern day.
Yes.
She's also pregnant.
Yes. And we get again this sort of parallel thing because Tanya and Rosie are like comforting Sophie about her dirtbag boyfriend Dominic Cooper. Yeah. And then back in the past.
They sing a song.
Yeah. There's another fat joke here where fucking Amanda Seyfried and Christine Baranski like leap sort of lithely over a table and then Julie Waters gets to it and she has to like go around and it's like, oh, fuck off.
It's just genuinely very mean-spirited to Julia Waters.
It's a very lovely
woman.
Curiously, yeah. No, it's strange.
It's strange, but that's the one, like, it's, there's no homophobia because gays don't exist in the Experience Machine, despite being a fucking musical about ABBA, which is very strange to me. No, wait, gays do exist because Omid Djalili's there.
That's true. There's Omid Djalili, there's kissing Celia Imrie on the lips, and then there is one line,
there's one
little line between Tanya and Rosie where they're like, oh, we won't have any guests because of the storm, and Tanya goes to Rosie, well, I guess there's always just us, which leads me to believe that that's like a kind of a sloppy second sort of like relationship. Anyway.
I believe it.
At this point, everybody arrives!
This is literally, the title of this scene is everyone returns to the island at some point. Just, yeah, great, fantastic.
Yeah, so we get Stellan Skarsgård and Colin Firth. First of all, perfect duo. Insane.
Yeah, I love
the dad stuff where all of these old guys are together. First of all, Omid Djalili talks to Stellan Skarsgård and roasts him. So first of all, we have...
Same border guard. Very funny.
A soundbite of me turning 25.
Your hairline is disappear. Your face, it collapse.
So they're both... They're both sad and they're old, but they have this kind of like repartee fun. Like Stellan Skarsgård's like, yeah, he's like, why'd you come to the island? And Colin Firth goes, well, I'm spontaneous. And they both go, no, you're not.
it's very nice that Omid speaking to Stellan Skarsgård that says that line, but fucking Colin Firth is just like, for you, age becomes you. It's just like, hell yeah, man, thanks.
I think Colin Firth actually winks at him, which is great.
Yeah,
So at this point, they're drinking together, and Colin Firth does a bit of like self bondage. What he does is, the way he describes it is,
faced with a problem, you literally strap yourself down, can't get up until it's solved.
The problem is how to get to the island, because the storm, despite having now cleared, the ferries aren't running. So
yes. Stellan Skarsgård ties Colin Firth up a bit more, and while he's thinking, Stellan runs into
Shibari Mind Palace.
Runs into Alexios, and at this point, again being dropped in from another movie. I don't want you to say anything just yet. I just want you to listen to two drops that I have. Mm-hmm. Right. All right. Here's the drop.
These are difficult days for them. For all us fishermen. For many years now, we do more and more work for less and less pay. Now our boats lie idle, and we drink in joyless surrender to our economic fate.
So the thing is, Alexios is based.
Alexios is very funny because like Bill doesn't recognize him, and he's just like, I try this, and drinks a bit of water and just starts yelling.
There's another great dad joke here, because like Alexios tries to get everybody's attention in the vase and go like, oh, hey, this is my friend who rescued me, and nobody's paying attention because nobody gives a shit about like old men stories, and that's perfect.
So in the past, there's something we skipped over, which is when Sam, which is Pierce Brosnan but young, comes back to the island, that old Greek woman fucking gives him such a talking to.
Mm. Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's the most brutal beatdown I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he comes back because we're like, oh, like I don't want to be with my fiance, like I actually love Donna, and the old Greek woman who owns the hotel is like, fuck off. And he does.
The line it's called karma, and it's pronounced ha.
Yeah, it's nice. She's like she's on a boat with a Swedish man, just getting raw dogged all day.
Absolutely.
So then everyone like turns up on the island because Alexios gives them a lift. They sing Dancing Queen. Everyone's really happy to see each other. Dominic Cooper's there. There's one of the lines in Dancing Queen is young and sweet, only 17. And we get like Pierce Brosnan and the two old women like doing a little bit of an reaction to that line, which is I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, at this point it is like a dance number on a boat. Yeah,
like this is not diegetic. It's fun. But whatever.
Yeah. We see in the past Donna gives birth to Sophie.
Bill and Harry have only invited a bunch of like middle-aged Greek fishermen, and yes, when the boats roll up, it is 90% like hot young adults.
They're showing up like, do you know the bit in Mad Max where like they're all hanging off of the trucks and stuff? It's like that, yes, but on a series of fishing boats. The Duke Basic Warrior way. Is coming to this Greek island.
Yeah, so surely this is the finale of the film, which is that you would think, because like everyone arrives, like, oh, it's a party, like, oh, family's the most important thing. Like, in the past, you know, Sophie's been given birth to, so like, we learned something about motherhood, presumably. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know it. I'm probably legally not allowed to be a mother.
We tie up some stuff with Rosie, because she's like, she's having kind of Spectre at the Feast vibes, and she confronts her ex, Bill. And she's like, oh, you're just like this dumb playboy, which is you know, true. No one in the movie ever has any actual responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So of course you cheated on me. You're never going to change. You're never going to learn anything because you've never faced any consequences for anything. And then he goes, well, I'm sad because Meryl Streep is fucking dead and not appearing in this movie. And this is enough for her to take him back. Fine. I mean, the thing is, the thing that you want to do in fiction, we've talked about this before, is you introduce an obstacle and then you immediately solve it.
And we're about to do that again, because here comes the villain of the film 20 minutes before the end.
Yeah, there she is. It's who's in this movie? It's fucking Cher.
It's fucking Cher. I arrives
by helicopter as Sophie's grandmother, who hasn't been seen outside of Las Vegas in years.
Yes.
She's looking great.
She is
looking fantastic.
She's kind of mean to her. Like, Sophie confronts her about never being there, and she goes,
you know, so if being a grudge holder makes you fat.
Which, again, is meant to be a, like, what line, but it's still another fat.
She arrives and she's like, yeah, you know, I want to be, like, a part of your life. Like, I realize I haven't been a great grandmother, but I want to start now. And she's just, like, instantly welcome. And, you know, at no point does Sophie say something on the lines of, I buried my fucking mother, Meryl Streep, and you weren't there.
Without you.
Where the fuck have you been? Get out.
In Vegas.
Like, apparently. This is the kind of shit that, like, families never forgive each other for. It's like, if you don't turn up to the funeral, like, Jesus Christ. But it's fine. It doesn't matter. And also, it turns out she's Andy Garcia's ex.
Yes, because his name is Fernando, the ABBA song.
Now, here's my procession of notes here. I wrote, his name is fucking Fernando. And then I wrote, no, God, please. And then I wrote, no. And then I wrote in all caps, fuck, as they began to sing the ABBA song, Fernando.
The really funny thing here is, and this is the Alice corner here, the song Fernando, right, is about a Mexican guerrilla. Right.
Yes, this is my note also.
The stars shine for Liberty, Fernando, things of that nature. And he says, Mexico City, 1959. Now, there's two possibilities here, right? One is that Andy Garcia was involved in the fishing skirmish between Mexico and, I think, Honduras, where nobody was killed.
But Cher was involved.
Can't be, because one of the lines is that crossed the Rio Grande. So, like the song is specifically about the Mexican Revolution, right? So if you take this song as text, right, you imagine ABBA does not exist.
He was fighting a one-man communist insurgency in 1959.
These two people are just singing autochthonously about authentic truth of a life that they've experienced together.
Yes.
They are Mexican revolutionaries.
Yes.
Cher was involved in the Mexican Revolution.
the Mexican Revolution of 1959.
This song is not diegetic because nobody else hears it. But anyway, they sing this song together, they reunite, they kiss, fireworks go off, and I'm like, okay, this is like the third finale we've had in a row. Surely,
that's the end, right?
Surely at this point this movie has ended.
Right,
no,
right.
Because this movie has more endings than Return of the Fucking King. So we cut to 9 months later.
Where we have to see Sophie is going to the church to have her infant son baptized, right? And that we see the dads arguing about whose, like, granddad it is, which leads to a baffling Skarsgård line.
What about his beautifully shaped feet?
Huh? you have the little Brosnan
so fast.
You get a little Brosnan, huh? At the end there, too. Huh? Huh?
Also, at this point,
Pierce Brosnan learning a clue.
The island of green screen. The island of green screen is not looking good. Like, the experience machine is starting to lag because, like, the green screening in this sequence is terrible. Some of Amanda Seyfried's hair has been keyed out and, like, it's just like has sky in it. It's
yeah, it's very
really
funny.
Bad.
Yeah, it's not good. But
there,
like,
is a line I want to flag up, and sure, it's from an earlier scene where, like, Sophie, pregnant, she's only told Sky, right? And mm-hmm, and like, apparently everyone knows now, and she's like, Sky, what the fuck? He's like, look, Sky's like, what the fuck? And Sophie's like, well, I only told
it's
Sam.
Brosnan.
Yeah, and yeah. Pierce Brosnan's like, well, I only told Stellan Skarsgård, he's one of the other dads. Stellan Skarsgård's like, I only told Colin Firth, you know, he's the third dad. And Colin Firth goes, I told so many people. And I was like, perfect line read.
Great.
Love these
fantastic.
Men.
Yeah. Three good actors.
Sometimes a family can be just three dads.
Yes.
No
absolutely.
Kids. Just three dads hanging
that's
out.
That's what this podcast is.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
We are your dads.
Yeah, we are your three dads.
That's right.
All three of us nutted in your mum.
That's right.
On consecutive
that's right.
days.
We worked shifts, is what happened.
Weirdos.
Yeah, the weirdos. We
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But then guess what?
Three ingredients of the Holy Trinity of the roux of the gumbo made of cum inside your mother.
Cumbo, if you
the
will.
Cumbo, yeah, the gumbo.
But speaking of your mother, guess what? She's a force ghost.
Yes.
Meryl Streep's in the fucking movie.
Streep, baby!
She's here.
Zombie Meryl Streep.
Turning up on set for one day, collecting that paycheck, yes, baby. It's Meryl Streep.
The thing is, I liked the way this is done, right? Because Sophie goes into the church to baptize the thing, and then the next interior shot is the fucking young Donna going into the church to baptize baby Sophie. And for a second, I was just like, huh? Oh, okay. But then we see Meryl Streep as Force Ghost.
Yes.
And they sing to each other. And you think that's the end? It's not quite.
My notes say all caps, it's still not over.
It's still not over because
was getting up off my sofa.
Yeah, we're bringing back the finest cinematic tradition of the 1970s. The all cast dance party in the credits.
And it's good. This
yeah,
is
this
good.
Is cute.
Yeah,
I like this sequence. It was cute.
More movies should
this
do this.
Owned. It's mm-hmm. good. You get a lot of scenes of like the actors dancing with the actors playing their younger characters.
Yeah, it's fun.
Pierce Brosnan
like
seems to be having
finale.
A great time with like young Pierce Brosnan, and we get like total collapse of diegesis and metaphor.
Hugh Skinner.
Yeah. Okay. It just kind of like all collapses into this melange and into this goo in the machine.
And Meryl Streep is also in that because, like, even though the theme of the movie was grief, death has no meaning in the experience machine. Even if you're dead, you will still get to see your family live on. Like,
yes.
There is no pain. There is no suffering. The message of this movie is just everything's fine.
Yeah, which is great.
That's a perfect
just
message.
One of the messages. Sorry.
Have a nice time. Mm. And listen, I cried at the end of this movie. I'm not too proud to admit that because I am Earth's
I was also
faggot.
Grateful that it was over.
No, I am weak to any musical, however bad it may be, so long as it's not written by Andrew Lloyd Webber. And so, consequently, I was crying my eyes out at the end of this. What do you want from me?
Notably, that doesn't eliminate Hamilton.
Make
what you will.
I haven't seen it. No, I haven't either.
I've been so powerfully avoiding
seeing
Hamilton.
Line, pardon me, sir, are you Aaron Burr? And then I decided that I was trying to like wipe it from my brain.
Is this the Chattanooga choo-choo?
That's Mamma Mia. Mamma Mia, here we go again.
So this film has two messages. One is everything's fine, which, okay. The second is, if you have a passionate feeling, if you have like a strong, heartfelt desire, particularly if it's about an American blonde woman, you should follow that desire without heed to the consequences. Don't think about tomorrow. Don't plan for your future. Just fucking go for it.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah, baby.
I have lived by that advice for many years, and I would say that on balance, it's probably brought me slightly more pleasure than pain. So I think that's good advice.
What?
That's a good moral.
Absolutely.
It's a 55-45 split, baby, but that's up.
Just
definitely.
Just
pretty much bang on that.
Yeah. Just do, ooh, do what you want.
Legitimately.
Have a have a nice time. Don't, you know, ever face any consequences for your actions.
If you are graduating somewhere and you go, you know what, there's probably a small island in the east of Greece that I can just colonize.
Yeah, just go to there.
Go do it. Fuck
go
yeah.
to there.
Be
magical.
I'll let you do it.
Yeah, let a bunch of guys bareback you.
Yeah, let a guy whose one selling point is I'm a British virgin. Yeah, let him fucking raw you. Why not?
Yeah, let his first experience of sex result possibly in a child by never practicing protected sex ever.
That's the 70s, baby.
That's
and
the 70s.
Grow a mustache.
If you are an aging heterosexual and that brings you some kind of pain, don't worry. You can simply breed. And that will make you feel better.
Yes, yeah. But this was a nice movie. I had a nice time. I enjoyed it.
I like the aunts.
It was. I said this before, but this is the fun aunts of movies. it's absolutely the kind of movie that like lets you drink too much red wine when you're like way too young.
Yeah.
Great. Fantastic.
I am a fun aunt, and I did not enjoy watching this one.
Well, I mean, listen, we can't always be happy with
like
the representation
right
we get on screen. That was
That's
brutal.
True. I would have liked it if there were more. I didn't even hear it. I would like it if there were more.
I'm not arguing with my dearest friends in the world.
I would have liked it if there was more like gay shit involved in this gay ABBA musical.
Like it's very strange to me that like nothing about the songs of ABBA necessitate this plot. Like, it could have been anything, and it would still successfully be a jukebox musical about ABBA. Mm. So it's just interesting all the choices that were made, because none of them were, like, forced.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. Like, it didn't fill me with a desire to watch the first one.
Mm. But we watched
the first
one, and now we've had done with it.
Now it's time to put the VR helmets back on, or and go back into the goo. Or in my case, to pick up my rifle and go back into the wastes.
Yeah, to wage single-handed war on the Mexican government.
I'll do it, baby.
Those of us who value truth and duty will be out in the radioactive wastes, and those of us who just want to be happy will be in the virtual world listening to ABBA.
Subcommandante Thorn. The goo. Put me in, baby.
What's our next episode going to be?
I don't know.
This comes out after The Rock, so hi, sorry, we faked you out there, but I promise you have won my heart.
Gotcha. It's Casino Royale
next. Will be Casino Royale.
It's Casino Royale, that's right.
Let's go.
Is it my turn to pick
a brand
the bonus
new guy,
list?
Baby.
I think
yes,
it is your
that
turn,
is true.
Yes.
Ah, I think I know what it's going to be then. I would like to watch the Alex Rider Stormbreaker film.
Hell yeah, okay.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, yeah.
Fuck it.
I think it's time
for that. Yeah. Let's do it, baby.
Well, this has been Kill James Bond.
We have been your three dads.
Yeah, we are your
right.
three dads.
We're all very proud of you, and we will see you.
I am so proud.
On the next episode.
Thank you for listening to yet another episode of Kill James Bond. Next week on the free feed. Casino motherfucking Royale. Thank you for being a patron. I'm rushing through this because I have 47 names to fucking read out, so let's just crack right on with that. Thank you for our £15 and above patrons, and those are Forks Winchester, Jack Holmes, Paint McCullough, George Roach, Thomas Oberhart, Sol Pratek, British Pterodactyl, Nikki, Phil West Music, Carolyn Tankersley, Amber DeGrazia, Rain with the long name, Benno Rice, Amanda Rogder, Max Gamenhardt, Kit Devine, Sydney Steckel, Dread Pirate Robin, Hell Bloodhands, Kentucky Fried Commie, Jay Martindale, Jack Bushell, Tarp O, Field Commissar, Jen, Big Titty Goth Girl, Mothman, Timothy Pizzoni, Trip, Charlie in the Closet, Elizabeth Cox, Zoe Shepherd, Finn Ross, Avery Darling, Alfredo, Al Irwing, Ryle Leal, David Wickramaratna, James Knappman, Richard Drum, Millie, Robbie Morgan, Bon LeBon, Josh Simmons, Penny Banks, Wolfie, and Philippa Smith. Yeah, cheers for the fucking dollars, boys. It's Kill James Bond, Alice Abigail Devon, producers Nate Bethay, podcast art Maddie Lubchansky, website Tom Allen. See you on the flip side, lovers.